Wally, how are you? Ed Coleman, Gary Myers here.
Yeah, Eddie and Gary, good to be with you, man. Good afternoon to you guys.
Hey, Baldy, before we get started on these incredible Baldy's breakdowns that you do on Twitter, I just want to let the people know, and you got to let them know, who discovered you? Rookie training camp 1982 Thousand Oaks among 80 rookies. I found this guard from Duke University. First time I talked to him, I said, this guy's making the team because he's smarter than everybody else here.
Gary, why are you doing this, Gary? Why are you dating us like this going back to 1982?
That's exactly. I almost fell off my chair when he said 82. I said, God,
I know.
But, Paul, do you remember how you were like one of 80 rookies that they used to bring in? It was unbelievable.
Well, actually, Gary, yeah, that year, I mean, I still have a Gil Brandt sent me this thing from 1982 that year. There was actually 110 free agents.
Oh,
and we actually had 16 rookies. 16
wow.
Drafted rookies. We had 126 rookies that year.
Jeez.
We had 50, they drafted 16 players that year. It was unbelievable.
So, listen, no disrespect, but how does a free agent from Duke wind up making the team when the competition is like that?
Smarter than everybody else, obviously.
Yeah, well, that...
I had a lot of tricks up my sleeve. Man. I had a lot of tricks up my sleeve, man. You know, back then, though, you know, I mean, it was kind of that year, they had just gotten beat by the 49ers in the championship
right.
game the year before by Dwight Clark and at Candlestick Park. And Landry came in, and his first message to the team that year was, we have to get tougher. So that was like the toughest training camp that, you know, Randy White or, you know, Drew Pearson, anybody ever went through. And so that was my sort of indoctrination to the Cowboys. But hey, that's where it all started, Gary. We all kind of had our humble beginnings back then.
How many fights did you get into training camp that summer?
Pretty much daily. I mean, I fought every day, and then, you know, a couple years later, Lockhart came, and I fought Lockhart every day. I mean, it was pretty much a spat going on all the time. And then whenever we would scrimmage the Rams or the Raiders, that was just a brawl. So, you know, I mean, you could fight your way onto the team back then.
Oh, without question. And you had guys like Smerick and Randy and John Dutton who enjoyed mixing it up every now and then.
Yeah, those were the good old days. It's a different league now, but, you know, it's all kind of changing, I guess, for the better. But those were days that I'll never forget. I know that.
You know, Brian, you look at this Cowboys team now, and it's almost like a little throwback. You know, the way they're playing, and they're playing at a high level right now, too, but it's almost like a little throwback, using Elliott, running game, good defense, hard-nosed stuff. It's a little bit of a throwback there.
They're on a good roll right now, Ed. And, you know, it's interesting. When you watch the Cowboys defensively, we've all known Rod Marinelli a long time, and I remember talking about a couple years ago when they were kind of starting this youth movement, and you know, he always preached just effort and, you know, no loss and all that. And he said to me one thing that I always remember. He goes, just when you think you've played hard enough, I'll show you how you can play harder. And one thing you cannot deny about this Cowboys defense is they play hard. And you could do that when you're really young. And all those guys, except for the nose tackle, Antoine Woods, every one of those guys has been drafted. And I know Jerry Jones and his, you know, his sons have all taken a lot of heat for their drafts. But when you watch them play right now, every one of those players is homegrown. They've built from Leighton Vander Esch to Jalen Smith to DeMarcus Lawrence. They built that team through the draft.
Brian, probably the best site on Twitter for anybody who is into the X's and O's of football is Baldy's Breakdown. And Dan Duggan from The Athletic, by the way, wrote a great story about you yesterday that I would really recommend people reading. What gave you the motivation to spend so? I know you watch tape anyhow, but then the motivation to try to explain it on Twitter, where I don't know if you're able to monetize it at all, but you spend a lot of time doing that, and I find it, you know, I hate to admit this, Eddie, but I actually find that Brian is educating me.
Well, that's a nice compliment, Gary, because you've been around the game a long time. You've interviewed a lot of, you know, coaches and written books and the whole thing, but really, what it came down to, Gary, was I've announced games either on Fox or national radio in the NFL for over 20 years. I worked for the NFL Network, and I always end up leaving the game or leaving the network going, did we teach anybody anything today? And when I sit in the film room, I constantly see either great effort, great technique, bad effort, bad technique, wide plays were. And I thought, you know, we got this vehicle of Twitter. I never was really into the, I had a flip phone 2 years ago. You know, I mean, I wasn't into any of it. And then I thought, well, let's just show a clip here and a clip there of somebody showing great effort. DeMarcus Lawrence chasing a player across the field. You know, I mean, I don't know, Odell Beckham beating a double team, whatever it was. And I just started posting it. And then I found that there was a real connection. And then I discovered that there is just a huge gap between what fans are getting and what fans really want. And it's no knock on any television executive or anybody else out there. It's just hard for Troy Aikman or Tony Romo or anybody out there to really explain the game in 12 seconds in between plays. You have to slow it down and really look at it carefully. And that's what I found out in the film room, that I could really do that. And I found out that's what fans really want. They really want to see why a play worked. Why did that two-point play work at the end of the Charger-Chiefs game? Like, how did the Chiefs get this wrong? Mm-hmm. Well, you got to go back and really study what they were doing and why they made the error and how the Chargers won a game. And these games all come down to certain plays or players and all that kind of stuff. And I just feel like there's a real desire to kind of find out deeper things about the game.
That's a great, it's a great concept. You're right, because the guys in the booth, no fault to them, really. You don't have the time there. You got 10 seconds, 12, maybe 15 sometimes, you know, before the next play gets underway, and it's tough to do that. Brian, have you ever done, one thing that drives me crazy is watching receivers run routes and or not run routes, if you know what I mean. Some guys are great at, you know, following what they should be following and running precise routes. Other guys, you know, give it a half-hearted kind of, kick through. Yeah. Have you ever done anything like that?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a perfect example of this, Ed, is Amari Cooper.
Okay.
So Amari Cooper is in Oakland, and, you know, they're not getting the ball, but he's a great route runner. But in order to run great routes, you need time. You need time to kind of turn the cornerback's hips, to set the play up, to get to separation. Well, he's playing with two rookie tackles. That Brandon Parker and Colton Miller, they might be good players eventually, but they're rookies, and so they struggle from time to time. And early in the year in Oakland, I mean, Derek Carr just had no time to throw the ball. But if you come to Dallas, where they have a better offensive line and a really good running game, you know, Dak Prescott has time to allow Amari Cooper to do what he did to the Eagles, you know, last Sunday night. Well, I mean, he had 10 catches for 190 yards in the second half of that game.
Yep.
But he had time to beat Sidney Jones, to beat Rasul Douglas, to beat the Eagles. And he's getting time in Dallas to really show his expertise and really the science of being a good route runner.
Brian, the offensive line obviously has been a huge issue for the Giants the last couple of years. Based on what you're seeing from them now, how many of these guys are keepers? Now, we know Solder is because of the money, and Hernandez, a second-round pick. And talk about the impact that Jamon Brown has had since they got him off of waivers from the Rams. But of the five starters right now, how many can they win with going forward?
Well, I think they can win with three for sure. I mean, I think Jamon Brown, Will Hernandez, and Nate Solder for sure. I'm not knocking Pulley or you know, the right tackle right now, but I think that when you look at your
Wheeler,
I mean, Wheeler. I mean, I think all of them could, within time, be a good cohesive unit. I mean, what they did last week in that win to the Redskins, I mean, they dominated the line of scrimmage, and that's a good, I mean, you could talk about the Redskins and Sanchez and injuries and all that, but their front is healthy, and they're all number one draft picks up there, from Kerrigan to Allen to Payne, and they moved the line of scrimmage, and they won the line of scrimmage. They did it in the second half against the Bears, who were the league's second-best defense. They did it for three quarters against the Eagles, Gary. I mean, that is probably the most improved group in the league right now. And then if you add Scott Simonson and Rhett Ellison to that group, because the tight ends were a big part of it, I mean, you can win with that group right now. Now, can you upgrade at center the way, let's say, the Chargers upgraded with Mike Pouncey, or the way the Falcons did 2 years ago with Alex Mack? Well, if you can get, you know, a bona fide superstar at center, that solidifies everybody. That makes everybody better up front. It makes the quarterback better. So, I mean, if they can do that, then you should do that.
Do you subscribe to the theory that if they can protect Eli a little bit better, that the Giants can be a playoff team? Or do you think that Eli's skill set is eroded to the point that they just need to make a change regardless after this year?
I said one day, Gary, in my Baldy's breakdowns, that the only guy that could play quarterback for the New York Giants was Eli. Because he doesn't get hurt. I don't know how he doesn't, but he doesn't. I mean,
fair point.
You remember back, like week two against the Cowboys? I mean, I've never seen a quarterback get hit that hard
and
that many times. And it was one breakdown after another. And it was free hitters coming at Eli. And he just kept. And so, like, it's hard. I don't care what your name is, Brady, Breeze. It's hard to play quarterback when you're getting hit like that. But I think Eli can still play, you know. And if he had more confidence in the group up front like he does now, he's going to play better. And so, I mean, I don't know what's coming out of the draft this year. I mean, it's still early. Herbert, you could go through the list of these guys. I don't know if anybody's going to be as good as Patrick Mahomes or Baker Mayfield or Sam Darnold. I mean, I don't see anybody coming out like that. So, I mean, if you're the Giants, try and get better up front. I mean, you're not going to find anybody better than Saquon in this league. You're not going to find anybody better than Odell or Shepard at wide receiver. So, I mean, I just keep building and keep building up front and get the Eagles won last year because they had the best offensive line in the league. And they stayed pretty healthy except for Jason Peters. And that allowed Carson Wentz and, you know, Nick Foles to play like they did. And so I keep building up front and trying to get better.
I think Baldy hit it on the head, exactly what the Giants are going to do, as a matter of fact, for next year. And everybody thought coming into this year, well, you know, the offensive line holds up. Eli will be great. Look at all the weapons he has. Bingo. Barkley, et cetera. You know, maybe it's next year when that comes to fruition if you get that line finally solidified. Who knows?
So, Baldy,
it's a big start. It's a good start.
Yeah, I saved the most important question for last. It's kind of a technique here, you know? So, in your days in Thousand Oaks, how many times did you join the veterans over the wall after curfew and head to L.A. at night?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, those things can't be told on public airways. those are only told in, you know, in our get together sessions now back in Dallas, wherever else. But let's say this, Gary. I did my share of mischief when I was with the Cowboys, all right? And we had our share of fun. And I don't know that we could ever go back to that era again. But it makes for a lot of great storytelling right now.
I'll tell you this. I did this book on the Cowboys that came out a couple months ago, and I have a story that Dennis Thurman told me that one night he and Dorsett and Ron Springs waited for bed check. Jim Myers, the offensive line coach, who you obviously knew very well, did bed check. Okay, these guys are here. They waited for him to leave the dorm. They went out the door. They hopped in Thurman's car. Thurman from L.A. knows all the places. They went to the Playboy Club and bars and whatever.
Yeah.
They get back at 3-4 o'clock in the morning. There's a note on the door. Jim Myers had done a second round of bed check. And I need you to verify this. Thurman claims that when you came back, in order to reduce your fine for breaking curfew, you had to go wake up Landry and say, Coach, I'm sorry, I broke curfew, but I'm back now. And he would cut the fine like in half. But if you didn't do that, then you got the full fine. And he talked about knocking on Landry's door. I can only imagine Tom, you know, walking to the door in his pajamas and his little beanie cap. Did that ever happen to you?
I never did that, Garrett, but I never got caught. I mean, I stuffed my bed with pillows and made it look like I was underneath the blanket. So I was a little bit smarter than Dennis Thurman.
There you go.
The old
you went to Duke and he went to SC.
There you
go.
Yes.
Brian, listen, always good talking to you. You can, when you retire, you can put it on Twitter, okay? Everything that happened at Thousand
Oaks. I'll put
it
all on Twitter. Yeah. I'll do it in 240 seconds.
Thanks,
hey,
Brian.
Baldy, thanks a lot.
Okay, you bet. Anytime. Talk to you, Eddie. See you. See you,
you got it.